Hello everyone, hello football fans around the world. Welcome to the Squawker Talker. I'm joined this week by another three members of Squawker staff. Greg Stobart, our senior reporter, has joined us. Hello, Greg.
Hi, Nick.
How's it going?
Very good, thank you. Very happy to be here.
Oh, fantastic. It's good to have you. Also joining us is social media director, James McManus. Hello, James.
Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
Pretty good.
Yeah, feeling good. And also joining us is, it's that man, it's that time again, it's Squawker Dave. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Nick. How are you, mate?
I'm good.
Excellent. Great start to the podcast.
Fantastic. Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. We're going to kick things off by talking a little bit about the Dortmund-Liverpool game yesterday. And everyone's talking about Divock Origi, Greg. I mean, pretty sensational subs to sort of lineup choice from Jurgen Klopp, that.
Yeah, it was a big decision that Jurgen Klopp had to make. Daniel Sturridge or Divock Origi. Sturridge, you would say, normally is the main man at Liverpool. He's their main striker. He's their top goal scorer. But he's had a dip and Origi's come on leaps and bounds in the last few months under Klopp. And you sense that Klopp knew that there'd be space in behind, that Dortmund might be a little bit slow on the turn. Origi was excellent all game. He got substituted in the second half, but running the channels, his pace in behind, and he took his goal brilliantly. And you have to say that he will start next week in the return leg.
James, how does this Liverpool performance rank against others in Europe recently? How does this fare versus the others?
It's probably the best European performance we've had since Rafa left.
Really?
It's exactly the sort of performance Klopp was hired to produce. You hire a world-class manager and you're not a world-class team. You've got to get more out of less, and that's definitely what he's done last night. I think it was a good... It shocked everyone that Origi started over Sturridge, but he said post-match, Klopp did, that he's going to alternate between both of them between now and the end of the season.
That's interesting.
And I think it's quite refreshing that no one's guaranteed a starting spot anymore.
Mm.
You kind of thought under Rodgers, as soon as Sturridge was even 70% fit, he was straight back in that starting 11. I think the opposition managers knew that. Mm. But I think he outthought Tuchel last night. I think he knew Piszczek pushes forward too much. Hummels is slow on the turn. Bender's not the quickest. So I'll play someone that can really stretch them and is good with the ball in tight spaces. And it really, really worked.
It's funny how Klopp's, you know, obviously Liverpool's record has been a bit patchy since he's come in. He needs time to bed in his ideas. But in the big games, Liverpool have constantly been delivering, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, this is a Dortmund side that are unbeaten in their last 17 games. They're an absolutely world-class team, top five teams in the world. And to go away from home and draw 1-1 shouldn't be underestimated.
Mm.
But like you mentioned, the big game results, they've beat United at home 2-0, beat City 3-0 at home, 4-1 away at City. So he does work out a particular game plan. Mm. But I think the first 20, 25 minutes last night, it was sort of pressing high up the pitch and then standing off when Bender and Hummels had the ball. So it was kind of planning against Royce and Aubameyang's pace. Because Hummels and Bender, the whole reason he played Bender is his distribution from the back. And Hummels is probably the best ball-playing centre-half in Europe. So it was just a very clever ploy. Mm. Sort of lure them in and then catch Springbun as soon as we had possession.
Yeah, I mean, Dave, a lot of people last night were talking about Mamadou Sakho's performance, which was, you know, Barney Roney quoted it as looking like a drunk Baresi, which I thought was quite amusing. How did you evaluate his performance and how did you think he asserted his authority on that Dortmund attack?
Yeah, I think he's very good. It dealt with the pace of what we mentioned before that had been so dangerous this season in the Bundesliga. It was a very good Liverpool performance. I think it was more of a collective than picking up at an individual. Obviously, Sakho made that cracking block, but you've got to look at Lovren, who, you know, is changing form, and give credit for the rest of the back four as well, and then Emre Can as well, sort of holding in front. I think it's sort of changed Lucas. I thought Lucas was quite good under Klopp. He's sort of a Kloppy player where he likes to make tackles. He sits there for you, but his ball playing wasn't good enough. But now you've got Emre Can in there, a player that can pass the ball. He can break it up. He just needs to mature a little bit, and then Liverpool have got a really good holder, and I think that's a big question in this Liverpool side. They lacked a holder, you know, pretty much most of the season. If Emre Can can be that man, you know, save him a few pounds in the transfer window.
What can we expect in the game next week? You're the Dortmund aficionado at Squawker. What can we expect? What's Tuchel going to do? Because he was outthought in this one.
Yeah, I think he was. I think it did look more of a back five than a back four. I quite like that. How that would react, but Liverpool did. They got compact and they dominated that middle section of the pitch, and they sat deep at the right times. And again, the sort of three centre-backs that he did play, Piszczek, Hummels and Sven Bender, like Maka said, lack pace. And that could be that was a real problem against Origi. It was, you know, when he got turned, when he got running at that back four, it was dangerous. You know, Weidefeller did save them a few times. That one-on-one save he made was brilliant. Going down to Coutinho at his left-hand side. So how Dortmund can sort of change this, how can react, you know, they've got to go four at the back again. They've got to go out and they've got to attack. know, maybe getting another attacker on there to sort of complement the three forwards that we all know are so wonderful at creating. Maybe playing a holding midfielder as well instead of playing that third centre-back will help them getting further up the pitch.
I think the Dortmund players got caught on the occasion a bit much.
What, the Klopp friendly?
Yeah. There were loads of photos of Klopp before the match started, and he was just kind of watching the Dortmund players warm up, like just sort of standing 20 feet away, just sort of psyching them out. he just left the Liverpool players warming up on their own. It was just kind of like, yeah, Weigl, you're right. Yeah, Piszczek, I put you at right back from centre forward. Like, I made you. And I think the players, like the first 20, 25 minutes, they looked really sort of shell-shocked. Like, to shell-starting Eric Durm on the right midfield, that was a bizarre decision.
Mm.
Gonzalo Castro's a decent ball player, but I think a manager's made a mistake when they have to make a raft of changes, tactical and positional, at half-time. Nuri Sahin definitely steadied the ship when he came on, but I think Klopp's system that he set him up was perfect. And Liverpool now unbeaten. Well, we've only lost one in our last 13.
Yeah.
And that was that freak result against Southampton, which you can't account for Martin Skrtel. It's just not possible. He's just so bad.
What you've got to say about next week, Nick, now is what a chance for Liverpool to qualify for next season's Champions League. Mm. They're playing the favourites to win the Europa League. If they can get through Dortmund, they've got a real chance in this competition. They're only three games away. And how much would that accelerate Klopp's plans for Liverpool if they can get in Champions League next season? Because they're obviously not going to do it in the league. They're miles off. I think they're 9 points off the top four. But if they can win Europa League, that'd be huge for them.
Absolutely massive, and a real kickstart to Klopp's regime. James has literally put his hand up. He wants to talk more about Klopp. What have you got for us?
It's more about Liverpool's fixtures in the league between now and the end of the season.
Yeah.
They have, after Stoke, they have Bournemouth, Everton, Newcastle, Swansea, Watford, Chelsea, West Brom. So that in the current league table, that's 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th and 19th after the Stoke game. So that's a lot of teams with not much to play for. And Liverpool kind of do have a glimmer of a Champions League spot still. I don't think it's out of the ordinary.
No chance.
I'm a positive outlook on life. As you all know, that is a complete lie, what I just said there. I do not have a positive outlook on life, but there is still a glimmer of hope, I would say.
A very, very faint glimmer peeking through a floorboard from a ceiling light. Let's move on to the weekend's action. Probably the biggest game this weekend is Spurs versus Man United. Greg, you've actually broken a very, very interesting story this week about the senior Man United players being fed up with Van Gaal. Why don't you fill us in a little bit on that?
Yeah, it's nothing new, Nick. It's been going on for a couple of months now, and we know United have had a couple of better results, but it hasn't changed the way some of the players feel. I mean, it's not particularly difficult to guess who the senior players are because there aren't actually that many left at United now, but I think they're getting pretty fed up of the training sessions, of the boring football and the tactics, of his man management style. He's very aloof. He's very much a school teacher. And you've got these guys who have achieved a lot in football, who are earning hundreds of thousands of pounds. And I don't think they particularly appreciate his management style. And when they know as well as us, they've seen all the Mourinho rumours and they talk about it at lunch. They talk about it in the dressing room. They talk about it when they're playing FIFA at home. And I think they're really excited about the idea of Mourinho coming. And they're certainly not very happy with Van Gaal anymore.
Is it a case that the some of the more junior players are still, you know, very happy with Van Gaal and happy with his methods? It seems to be senior player exclusive, or
Well, some of the younger players, you have to remember that Van Gaal, for some of them, he's given them a chance. Someone like Marcus Rashford, he'll feel that he owes Van Gaal a lot, and he's not established enough in the squad to have that influence in the dressing room. Actually, Van Gaal, a lot of the youngsters, someone like Rashford, he still doesn't actually have a locker or a seat in the senior changing room.
He hasn't got a locker.
In the senior changing room. He's still with the youth team. He's still with the under-18s and the under-21s in the other building. And that's the way Van Gaal, he uses that as a motivation for them. You know, you get your first team locker once you're a senior player. But I think it's easier with them. They're easier to mould. And that's why Van Gaal historically has been better bringing through the younger players, and I think Giggs has helped with them as well. He's the arm around the shoulder one. He's the one motivating them, bringing up their confidence, and Van Gaal's the one on the training ground, moving them around like chess pieces.
Ryan Giggs trying to filter for Van Gaal's locker philosophy. The game this weekend is an interesting one because Spurs are yet to beat United under Van Gaal, and they haven't beaten United at White Hart Lane since May 2001. That's a pretty bad record.
It's a very bad record. They haven't even scored. Since Pochettino's Spurs team haven't scored against Man United yet.
Wow.
It's incredible. And we were talking earlier, first game of the season, United beat Tottenham 1-0, having one shot on target, and they scored through a Kyle Walker own goal. And we should have known then that that was a sign of things to come. I think it will be a bit more exciting at the weekend, especially the way Tottenham are playing going forward and with Harry Kane.
James, obviously Spurs trying to chase down Leicester, who keep winning 1-0 no matter what. Man United still in contention for a Champions League spot. Which way do you see this one swinging?
Spurs don't have European football now. They've got that little bit of extra rest. They've got a little bit more time with his players. Man United's are up and down more than a yo-yo at the moment. But I agree with Greg. I don't think the senior players are playing for him that much anymore. I think they've got one eye on the summer, their futures. And it's exactly what happened to Van Gaal at Bayern. He fell out hugely with Van Bommel, who was his captain the year previous, shipped him out. He always brings it through young players, because young players don't argue back if you tell them what to do. Whereas Wayne Rooney might be thinking, oh, I've had six, seven managers in my career and I haven't been treated like this way before. But whereas Spurs is complete opposite. He's got a core group of 20 to 24-year-olds who are all really buying into his ethos. Like Christian Eriksen is probably the form player, or one of the form players of the Premier League at the moment. He's created more chances in the Premier League in 2016 than any other player. More than Paye, more than Ozil, more than Mahrez. So I can see this one swinging Spurs this way.
Christian Eriksen often gets labelled as a sort of match of the day player, a highlight reel player. Is that a fair assessment of him?
I think we forget how young he is. I think he's 24.
Yeah.
So he's about 4 years younger than Mesut Ozil. So yeah. He's got a lot of development to do still. A lot of I know Liverpool were linked with him a lot before he signed for Spurs. And the kind of criticism against him that was that he was lightweight. But I remember hearing the same thing about Luka Modric when he signed for Spurs. Can he play in a two-man centre midfield? Isn't he a bit lightweight for the Premier League? And it's a bit of an outdated view of the Premier League.
Yeah.
Good technical players can thrive if you give them a proper role in the team. And Eriksen's got a long way to go, but I can see him playing for a potentially world-class side. Maybe even Spurs could become that.
Dave, everyone's talking about MSN. Should we be talking about KAE? That's Kane, Ali and Eriksen. They've got 35 goals and 19 assists between them in the Premier League. Really deadly strike force, but disciplined on the defensive side as well.
Yeah, I think so. I think with Christian Eriksen especially, his work rate since Poch took over as manager has really improved. Defensively, he's a lot better than he was. And it really complements the system with him coming inside and Dele Alli, you know, going the other way, running in behind. It works well. You know, Harry Kane, again, has hit some really good form. So he's going to be dangerous, but we've seen Daley Blind and Chris Smalling deal with Lukaku, deal with Aguero, so it's just their next challenge. You know, again, Daley Blind was really, really good on Lukaku. You know, out-muscled a few times, but he read the game really well. Didn't dive in. After being out-muscled, he was waiting. At the start of the season, he kept on, you know, against Gomis, for example, against Swansea, kept on being out-muscled, but then diving back in. And he's sort of maturing. He's becoming a pretty decent centre-back, you'd say. Going under the radar a little bit, you know, he's never going to play there, you know, next season, you wouldn't say whatever happens, because someone's going to be bought in the summer, but he's done well since he's come in. Very, very well.
I think Daley Blind, like Dave said, he's gone under the radar, but he's I don't know if anyone saw it, but John Terry named his PFA Team of the Year yesterday, and he stuck Chris Smalling at right back.
Interesting.
So it's because he didn't want to break up Wes Morgan, Robert Huth, which makes sense. And I guess there hasn't been a stand-up right back, but it's just sort of...
Hector Bellerin?
Yeah, but I agreed, but he'd probably be my one. But it's kind of shoehorning Chris Smalling into the team because that's the narrative, that he's had such a great season.
But
Daley Blind has, like Dave said, dealt with Lukaku brilliantly. A guy genuinely about another him on top of
two Blinds. <Yeah. laughs>
And he dealt with him fantastically well. He's a very clever player. I think it's gone under the radar how well he's been, like, improving at centre-half season.
They've needed strong defensive performances, Greg, because, I mean, if United continue to score at this rate, it'll be their lowest scoring season in the league since 1989. So, you know, and their top scorer this season so far is Martial with 8. You know, they can't get it together up front, can they?
Not at all. I think their top three scorers, Martial, Rooney and Mata, between them have scored 20 goals, which is 2 less than Harry Kane scored on his own, which tells you all you need to know about United going forward. And that's why Tottenham will fancy their chances. You score one goal against United, they're not going to score 3 or 4, especially at White Hart Lane. And it's something that needs to be worked on, certainly over the summer. You can't see United all of a sudden turning into a free-flowing scoring team. And it's one of the things that's been frustrating the players, because Van Gaal does suck out the creativity out of players. We've seen it in the past. That's why Di Maria's left. It's why Januzaj can't get anywhere near the team. He wants players to take an extra touch and keep the ball. He doesn't like players who attack. He doesn't like players who... He doesn't ask players to drive. He wants players... If the ball falls on the edge of the box, he asks players to take an extra touch before they shoot because it gives them more chance of hitting the target. And it's not really the United way.
Yeah, speaking of driving forward, let's talk a little bit about Moussa Dembélé. He's the only player as a seamless link, guys.
I thought that was linking to a car.
Speaking of players who drive forward, Moussa Dembélé is the only player in Europe's top five leagues this season to have completed over 70 take-ons, 70 tackles and 50 interceptions. Premier League's most underrated midfielder, Moussa Dembélé?
He's up there. He's been an absolute monster this season. You'd have said last summer, well, I know for a fact Pochettino would have sold Dembélé for the right offer.
Really?
But the way he's playing this season, next to Eric Dier, that's why Tottenham are the best defence in the league. It's not just the back four and the centre-backs and the goalkeeper. It's those two players in front, Eric Dier and Moussa Dembélé. And I've heard Jamie Carragher a lot of the time. Every time Spurs are on Sky, Jamie Carragher waxes lyrical about Dembélé. He says he's the new Yaya Toure, he's the new Patrick Vieira. And you can kind of see why. It's a bit much, but
he's
he's so strong. You just can't get him off the ball. He wins the ball back, and then when he dribbles, his passing's a little bit limited, but you can't take the ball off the guy, and it's perfect for Tottenham because it sets a foundation for the attacking players like Eriksen, like Ali, and like Kane that we were talking about before.
I think it says a lot when other players talk about how good someone is in training.
Yeah.
And every Spurs player is always saying, they always get asked, who's the best player in training? Because it's quite a similar age type squad, and everyone just says Moussa Dembélé. Genuinely can't ever get the ball off him. he's the first player you probably pick in your five-a-side team if you're a Spurs player.
He's deceptively enormous, isn't he? You don't realise it.
Well, he used to be a forward, so he's probably used to playing with his back to goal.
Yeah.
So he's used to dealing with centre-halves behind him.
Les Ferdinand, this is a couple of years ago when Les Ferdinand and Tim Sherwood were in charge of Tottenham. Les Ferdinand...
what an era.
So Les Ferdinand, it was just after Gareth Bale had gone, and Les Ferdinand said to Moussa Dembélé, if you apply yourself, you're the next one who's going to Real Madrid. Which kind of tells you something about the attitude at Tottenham at the time, that they were saying their best players for Real Madrid, but it also shows you how highly he was rated and how good he is. And it's why Tottenham... I mean, Man United were looking at him pretty hard when he was at Fulham, and I think a few United fans will be thinking now that they wish they'd signed him.
Yeah, he'd definitely be doing a better job than Ander Herrera.
Well, yeah, I think that's the physicality. I think I remember a Fulham performance, United won 3-2, but he was the best player on the park by a country mile, and he just has that physicality. But I think Eric Dier is the one that fair play, Moussa Dembélé is the box-to-box player that breaks up, but Eric Dier is the brains of that midfield, sweeping up. He's the clever player that comes between the centre-halves when he needs to, presses when he needs to. And he's very, very good at playing forward passes. You know, you look in the Premier League and there's no one in the current England squad that's completed more forward passes than him. So he's going to be crucial at the Euros, but he's also crucial to this Spurs team. If United can get around Eric Dier, slow the play down. Jesse Lingard recently has been playing central midfield and he's done really well. He's been tackling people. Look against City, against Everton, he's rocking at like 6-7 tackles in both those games. So if he can get near Eric Dier, sort of upset the flow a bit and try and counter-attack in the space behind him, that's an avenue for Manchester United. But I feel like, again, Louis van Gaal stumbled on another midfield that works. And it's not like out of planning. It's not like he's sort of sat there and been like, let's try this. It just seems like it's falling. And again, like last season we had Fellaini, Herrera and Michael Carrick. This season it's Carrick, Schneidlin and Jess Lingard. It just seems so mad in a way where we've gone through a summer, we've gone through this transition, and it's again stumbling on a little bit of good form, and that's it.
Well, whatever happens, Man United are going to be spending lots of money in the transfer window once again, which should be entertaining to watch. Also in the Champions League and title race-ish, West Ham versus Arsenal this weekend. West Ham have been a bit leaky at the back recently, conceding 6 in their last 3 Premier League games. James, is there an opportunity for Arsenal to claim a bit of ground in the title race, start to put people under pressure?
Well, I don't know. West Ham's record in big games is phenomenal this season.
Isn't it?
Absolutely phenomenal. That Slaven Bilic just seems to... He's just got such a well-drilled outfit. It's different when West Ham are playing a top 10 mid-table team because they're the ones playing behind the ball. It's probably what Leicester have had this season. No one's really had a tactical plan to combat Leicester with men behind the ball, men deep. They've just played them like another team thinking their form would die away. Mm. I think that's what a lot of teams have turned up and done to West Ham. Like they just kind of rock up and think, well, they're in a good bit of form, but they shouldn't really be where they are.
Mm.
And they actually should. They're actually a very good team. Dimitri Payet is probably a fair shout for player of the season, isn't he? But I think Arsenal have, like Dave said about Man United's midfield, Arsenal have kind of stumbled onto a pair that works in centre mids. Elneny and Coquelin are a perfect foil. Coquelin is good if you get him in his remit of terror, his 5-yard zone around him.
Remit of terror.
Yeah, if you get in that zone, if you get in that zone, he's gonna have you. But he's not the quickest, is he?
No,
whereas,
he's not.
Whereas Elneny, he's all legs and arms, like a baby lamb pegging it about the pitch. But he's very good at that. But I think he's kind of stumbled onto a formula, and you kind of wonder why wasn't El Nene sort of blooded in earlier.
It is a confusion for many Arsenal fans, Greg. Very surprising, since the turn of the year, the biggest criticism probably of Arsenal is that there's nothing in midfield. Cazorla is out. Coquelin was injured for a while, and it took him a long time to come back to fitness. Ramsey was seemingly all over the place. Now they're playing two central midfielders. They look like a team again.
Yeah, it was Flamini and Ramsey, wasn't it, at the start of the year, and it wasn't working at all, and that's when it all started going wrong. And yeah, it was a bit like last season when Coquelin came in January and played with Cazorla, and all of a sudden they had a balance, and that's what you need in a team. You can't just put some fantasy football 11 together, which is kind of what Arsene Wenger wants to do. Mm. He wants 11 Santi Cazorlas and Mesut Ozils, but you don't need that. You need that solid base, and like we were talking about Tottenham earlier with Dier and Dembele, it's quite similar actually with El Nene and Coquelin, and that just provides a platform for the attacking players to play. But like Maka said, I think this is Arsenal's season now. I think they've got to win every game to have any chance of the title. And West Ham are a very good team. They beat them at the Emirates on the first day of the season, and I think they'll probably beat them again.
Dave?
I think it's interesting. You know, we mentioned all these players that have tried to play in Arsenal's midfield this season. Again, Cazorla's a huge miss. Best player last season in the Premier League for me. He was so, so good. And now they've fallen on this combination. Ramsey, though, it's so strange to see a player that's supposed to be a really good central midfielder that can't play in a two.
Yeah.
He just can't do it. He's too energetic. He leaves his position too frequently. At the start of this year, as we mentioned, Flamini and Ramsey, that's a crazy midfield. No, one that's got superior legs and one that's running out of legs. Where's the ball player? Where's the creative influence out of the pitch? It's really interesting to see Ozil's form as well. He's been a little bit hot and cold in 2016. In 2015, that was his year. It seems like he's going on that little, he's good in some games, he's anonymous in other games, so it's going to be interesting. I really like Iwobi and Welbeck, though. They've been combining really nicely together. It's sort of like they've got that relationship. Coming in from the left, Welbeck sort of can drift out there. It's just good to see two young English players again sort of performing at Arsenal.
It's interesting that you mentioned Mesut Ozil. Just a couple of stats we can reel off. He's got the most chances created in the league this season, the most assists, most successful through balls, most successful crosses, most successful corners as well than anyone else. It's rare to see a player with those kind of stats and yet not even be remotely in for a shout for player of the year.
Yeah, again, you look at European top five leagues as well. I think he's completed the most passes in the opposition's defensive third and the opposition's half. So in terms of ball retention, in terms of creativity, he's been outstanding. But then I think the problem there is if you look at someone like Mahrez or Vardy or Payet, their consistent impact in a way.
They can finish.
They can finish and they're consistently performing in a way. Like I mentioned before, Ozil's been a bit in and out in 2016. But he should definitely be up there. I think ignoring him, 18 assists in the Premier League, he's so close to that record. Mm. You can't ignore that, can you?
Yeah, the record is 20 in a single season set by Thierry Henry quite a few years ago. James, talking about Payet versus Ozil directly, very different types of players. Payet's more of an impact player and a lethal finisher. Mesut Ozil can't finish anything.
He's a terrible one-on-one finisher, isn't
Awful.
He? For someone with such a... delicious foot? Is that a word?
Guile.
Delicious left foot.
It is now. It's a delicious foot.
I've coined the worst idiom anyone's ever heard there. Someone with a delicious left foot. I'm going to make it a thing. I'm going to keep using it. He's a terrible, terrible one-on-one finisher. And that's probably why he's so good at setting up chances, because he doesn't want to be in those positions.
Yeah. There was one against Aston Villa earlier this season when he was through on goal, and I was just thinking, slot it in, and I think he set up Ramsey. It was a lovely pass, but he just doesn't want to shoot.
That's 5 yard ball. Yeah.
Joe Allen's the exact same. You get Joe Allen in the final third, he just passes everything. Yeah. It's like you're one-on-one, stop doing it.
Well, unless it's against Arsenal in the last minute. Quick note on West Ham, Greg. I mean, great season for them. They're going to the Olympic Stadium next season. Really, really good time to be West Ham fan. If they keep up this form and they manage to get fifth place, it would be their highest finish since the 98-99 season, when Harry Redknapp was in charge and Shaka Hislop got Hammer of the Year. It's a good time to be a West Ham fan, isn't it?
Oh, wow. And I think they're going to get better as well. They're very ambitious. They obviously want to sign a star player to take to the Olympic Stadium. You can imagine if they've been trying to get Ibrahimovic, I don't think that's going to happen. But
good
someone
Lord.
Like Batshuayi. But with Payet and Lanzini, they've got two of the outstanding players in the league this season. The likes of Noble and Koyate have been brilliant too. Winston Reid's been fantastic at the back. They've got a really solid spine. They've got a bit of genius up front in attack, and I think that's what's made them so good this year. And I think they'll be just as good next year. And Leicester will give them hope that it might not just be Champions League football they're going for next year.
Mm. I think they're the team that are the Premier League team anyway that are the next one to be bought out by a massively rich owner. They've got the stadium. That's the big impediment to not. That's why Everton have never really been bought out before recently by a really, really rich like oligarch, because if you have to front up 300 million for a new stadium, that's immediately change you're never going to get back. But West Ham have a good stadium, a brand new, a good, very good manager.
Great fan base.
They're in London, so you can charge the earth for whatever you want.
And, as we all know.
I think they're on the cusp of having their Abramovich moment. Like Chelsea-Liverpool game, before Abramovich bought Chelsea, it was Chelsea and Liverpool going for fourth in the league. And basically, he just flipped a coin. Whoever was going to win that day and finish fourth, Abramovich was going to buy, and Chelsea won the game and finished fourth. And that's where... Well, I think West Ham, if they get in the Champions League, they're going to be bought out within 18 months, absolutely. They're such an attractive proposition.
In the Olympic Stadium contract, there is actually a penalty for David Gold and David Sullivan if they sell the club in the next few years.
But oh, really?
They'll still make an awful lot of money.
I bet they would.
West Ham, so don't worry about them.
A penalty of £500. Smoking on the tube.
Yeah.
Let's move up north a little bit, actually, to Sunderland versus Leicester City. Massive game for both sides. Leicester City need to keep the run going. They need to win the league. Everybody wants them to win the league except Spurs and Arsenal fans. And Dave, apparently, he's shaking his head quite vigorously.
No, it's got to be Tottenham, hasn't it?
It's got to be
Tottenham. Just, it'll be fun. It'll be more fun because we've had such a fun season already where Leicester have been like absolutely killing it. But they're getting a bit boring.
Yeah, we could do some drama, couldn't we?
Yeah, like some real drama.
I'm on the Leicester bandwagon. I'm really rooting for him. I ran into a guy in Camden, a pub in Camden one night and... Uh-huh. About 8 p.m. and he was. I've never seen a man drunker than this. At 8 p.m. And he was at the bar. And he was like, he just started a conversation with me. He said, "Oh, I'm a Leicester fan." I was like, "Oh, yeah, we're all rooting for you." And he went, and he just started crying, like little drinking tears streaming down his face. And I was like, "What do I do? What do I do?" But he was like, "That's Leicester fans are just like genuinely can't believe it." It's a great story. I think everyone in Europe kind of wants him. You hear people in Argentina going, "The only thing people talk to me about is Leicester." And they have like an in-depth knowledge of Daniel Drinkwater. It's like, I don't know why I call him Daniel. It's very informal.
Not on first name, not on drinky name basis. Yeah, Wayne Rooney calling Daniel Drinkwater drinky on ITV was quite a say. But Claudio Ranieri is going to face up against Big Sam, who is the ultimate pragmatist, the ultimate survival expert. This is probably one of the trickiest games that Leicester will have in their run-in. It's not going to be easy for them. Big Sam's been bemoaning recently their luck. They've been putting in good performances but not getting the results. How is he going to set up against them, and how can they sort of hurt the Leicester City title push, as it were, Dave?
I think we've seen Sam Allardyce sort of switch to a 4-5-1, you know, his system that he's played for years and years and years. You know, I think with that, they're going to... Against Crystal Palace was a game recently that sort of comes to memory where they were absolutely awful for most of the game. I think they nicked a goal from Jermaine Defoe. I think he intercepted a back pass or something. And I think that's how Sam will set up. You know, he needs a point. I don't think he needs the three. Mm. He just needs a point against Leicester City, and that would be a good result for him. But I think, again, with Leicester City, we've seen recently that they've really stumbled on these wins. They're not playing as well as they've been playing before, because, as you know, James said before about how teams have now worked them out. You sit deep against Leicester City, that cuts their pace. You cut off the supply to Mahrez, but all you've got to do there is defend set pieces, and that's where they've been dominating of late. You know, whipping balls into the box and getting their big centre halves on the ball. So it's going to be interesting to see this tactical battle, how you know, that pace goes up against a very slow Sunderland team. So they can't play a high line; they've got to sit deep. So they basically have to play how you should play against Leicester City. And you look at Kazawi, he's got a great delivery from wide areas. So if Sunderland can get up the pitch, you know, draw some fouls there, get some balls into the box, it could be an avenue for them to win the game.
Interesting. You mentioned Jermaine Defoe. Only Aguero and Kane have scored more Premier League goals in 2016 than Jermaine Defoe. And another interesting stat that might, you know, dictate how the game would go is that only Bournemouth have conceded more goals in the first half than Sunderland. 30. And also, conversely, Leicester have scored the first goal in 22 of their 32 Premier League games this season. James, it's basically a matter of who scores first and then gets to set up shop, isn't it?
Yeah, Troy Deeney did some great analysis on Match of the Day about Leicester, about how
I never thought I'd hear anyone say that sentence, by the way.
I've got a lot of time for Troy Deeney.
Me too.
He said it was basically, in a nutshell, that it's not just the two centre-halves that deserve the credit. Like, Danny Simpson and Christian Fuchs are great at defending like tight spaces. They defend their front and back post brilliantly. They kind of invite crosses in. Like, they just say, "Oh, well, get the ball in. These guys will win it." And is Jermaine Defoe going to win a header against Robert Huth? Probably Probably not. I'd bet on that.
We live to see the day.
Yeah, I'm not very good at betting. I'm genuinely pretty terrible. I put on Ricky Fowler to win the Masters, and I think he's tied 85th. Right? but I'd put money on Wes Morgan winning most of them.
Greg, how important is it for Leicester City to win this game? If they drop points here, is that going to start knocking the confidence, or is it so high that it doesn't even matter at this point?
Well, it's not that important, is it? Because they've got a 7-point gap.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, which is absurd. They can afford to drop points. They've only lost 3 games all season, and they probably need to lose another 3 to give anyone else a chance. We were talking about the Tottenham game earlier. If Leicester play before Tottenham at the weekend, and if Leicester win, it's 10 points before kickoff, and you have to say, we're done and dusted then with 5 games left.
It's incredible.
Leicester, yeah.
It's incredible.
I think that if you look at that, though, you look at Leicester's last 3 games. You want to play Everton, Chelsea and Manchester United. This Man United team's so inconsistent. They could turn up and they could beat them. Look at Chelsea. Chelsea have improved. And then Everton, again, a very inconsistent team that on their day could give someone like Leicester City a real hammering. So I think they've got to be maybe 10 points clear for the last sort of 3 games, because it could get to that time where these players that haven't won titles crumble, and then someone like Spurs can sneak in.
Well, I don't understand you wanting Spurs to win over Leicester. I really don't get it.
I just like what Pochettino's done. I think
everyone likes what Pochettino's done, but it's Leicester City.
Ranieri gets the dominoes in. How could you not be winning? One of the boys.
All right, let's move on to our regular weekly feature, which is called Analyze This, where we take one of our most popular stats on social over the week and sort of analyse it, talk about it. The one this week is, I don't know who tweeted it actually, but I'm sure James will know. It was during the Wolfsburg-Real Madrid game. It was the pitch invaders game by numbers. 0 tackles won, 0 aerial duels, 0 interceptions, 0 blocks, 0 take-ons. Same as Danilo. James, analyse that.
The pitch invader had a press pass, I'm pretty sure, round his neck.
He had a press pass?
He had some sort of lanyard round his neck, and it was like, what's he doing? But it was a fantastic photo. He's got his arms aloft in the air. He's really going for it. But
so was it someone who had like a corporate hospitality ticket or something like that?
Yeah, maybe. That's quite a way down, isn't it, from the box to the pitch?
It's a long
You've got to go past a lot of security to get down there. But I think if you ever watch Danilo play for Real Madrid, he just looks so far out of his depth that it's ridiculous. Like, Porto have sold him an absolute rotter there, haven't they? Yeah. He's Ali Sissoko Mark II, but he's playing for Real Madrid.
Good luck. That's a shout.
It's weird though, like at Porto last season, you know, you've got Alexandre there that's one of, you know, a really, really top class left back. And for me, Danilo was sort of overshadowing him last season. And for Porto in the Champions League, they looked really good. Yeah, both their fullbacks obviously were top class, but he looked like the better player. But it's that, you know, the switch to Real Madrid. You've already got Carvajal there that's a very, very good right back. Again, it was a very weird signing. Why would you go to Real Madrid, you know, and now you've got this pressure on you, now everyone's criticising you, now you're sort of, you know, all that form, all those games you play for Porto, sort of gone now, your confidence is shot in a way. Just that whole Real Madrid vibe, isn't it? Why would you want to go as a player, apart from the dollar?
Greg, you're the senior reporter here. I mean, you might have some insight into why did Real Madrid buy Danilo? Carvajal's one of the best right backs in Europe.
But I think there are a few teams in for him, and it's the Real Madrid thing. They don't want another team to sign him. I think there are a couple of English clubs, I think even Barcelona, were having a look because they need to replace Dani Alves. And Real Madrid's attitude so often in the transfer market is, we're not sure we want him, but we certainly don't want you to have him. And I think there's a bit of that in that deal.
They sort of just sign players just to keep themselves busy, like something to do over the summer holidays. Like, oh, school's out, what should we do? I'll just sign some people for a bit.
They did it quite early as well. I think it was well before the window was open. It was just like
it was a cheap deal as well.
You should have about 30 mil. I think it was quite expensive.
Should have focused on David De Gea, shouldn't they?
Well, they should have done really. Get that
fax machine working. It's not been plugged in.
That was Analyze This. More next week. And now is the part of the show where we get you to send in your questions. Ask Squawker Talker. Gary Goals has asked us.
He's
decided to ask the pods. Don't know if his real name's Gary. Who would you rather have in your team, Lewandowski or Aubameyang? That's a really good question. Very good. Greg. James.
Going first? Lewandowski for me, just because I don't think can't remember him ever having a particularly long lean spell. Aubameyang maybe has last season. And in my teams, I like to keep the ball more possession based rather than counter attacking football. So Lewandowski for me.
Stobes FC.
Yeah.
Look, can't wait for it. James, Lewandowski or Aubameyang?
Lewandowski all day. He's a complete package, isn't he? He's the closest you can get to Alan Shearer in the modern game.
I'd never thought of that comparison, but that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Alan Shearer? He's better than Alan Shearer. Yeah. Come on, mate.
260 Premier League goals.
Yeah, Lewandowski's Lewandowski. I think he's, again, exotic. I'd play a different style to Greg. I'd play on the counter-attack, but Lewandowski's your man. If you want to go, you want to hit him early, get the ball up to your attackers. You know, he's the perfect target man, false nine, poke.
Very good. Gary Goals has also asked, it's a twofer this week, so he asked the two best questions.
Number eight.
I wonder if he legally changed his name to Gary Goals. That'd
Mr.
be great.
Goals is on his
Mr. Goals, please tell us, son of Jerry Goals. He's asking the pod, what's your Premier League team of the season? What's your Premier League team of the season? Who wants to go first on this?
Full 11.
Full 11.
Okay, go on then. I'll go David De Gea in goal.
Uh-huh.
Hector Bellerin right back. Wes Morgan and Toby Alderweireld centre backs. Christian Fuchs left back. Two sitters. N'Golo Kante and Moussa Dembele. Riyad Mahrez and Dimitri Payet out wide. Mesut Ozil number 10 behind.
The big one.
So Harry Kane over Jamie Vardy.
Okay. First, that is the toughest decision, isn't it? It's like, do I play two up top? James?
I would go De Gea in goal as well. Bellerin at right back. I'd probably go Danny Rose at left back.
Interesting.
Yep. Centre-halves, I agree with Greg, Alderweireld and Wes Morgan, mm-hmm. I go for. In centre-mid, Kante has just been just another level. Brilliant. And I'll go Dele Alli with Mesut Ozil just ahead of him. It's quite an attacking three.
That is an attacking three.
But, I mean, it's a team of the season. It doesn't have to actually play a game. And then out wide, I would have Payet and Vardy in from the right. And I'd have Kane up top.
He's done a Roy Hodgson. He's played Vardy on the wing. I have.
That's probably a Cardinal sin. I've kind of probably forgotten a lot of good players there that I probably should have put since.
Just covering your bases, yeah. Just in case. Dave?
So similarly, going to go for David De Gea in goal. Hector Bellerin at right back. Centre back, I'm going to go with Robert Huth and Van Dijk. He's been brilliant this season.
The choice,
yeah. Then Monreal, left back. I think both Arsenal fullbacks have been so good this year. Then two holding midfield, going to go for Eric Dier and Kante, and then wide players Mahrez and Payet, and then up top it's got to be Kane and Vardy.
Ooh. I left out Riyad Mahrez. I've done that thing.
You've left out the best players.
But I've got Jamie Vardy on the right though. Haven't I? So it's all right.
Are you officially swapping in Mahrez for Vardy?
Yeah, it's a quick sub. It's loud, isn't it?
An early one, like you do on FIFA. Well, gentlemen, that's all we've got time for. Thanks very much for your time, Greg Stobart, James McManus, Squawker Dave. Thanks very much for coming on. We'll see you next week. Bye bye.